Save big on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine Exterior is Dutch Boy's most durable exterior paint. With its Rain Rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. This week, I'm joined by Sophie Corbett for a New Year's special. It's really common at this time of year for people to look into Veganuary, and whilst a vegan lifestyle can be part of a healthy lifestyle, it is important to consider your motivations during eating disorder recovery, which is why I'm joined by eating disorder dietitian Sophie Corbett, who specialises in veganism. And we explore the reasons why someone may want to be vegan during eating disorder recovery and how this needs to be taken as such an individual approach because it really does depend on the individual and their motivations. I really hope you enjoy this episode and Happy New Year!
It's so funny because I didn't really put this together before meeting you now, but you look a lot like one of my friends. And then just hearing your voice, you actually really sound like her. And now it's like, I don't think you maybe look as much like her as what it's now like, because I can hear you as well, which is really funny.
Oh, that's really funny. I sound exactly like my sister. So if they have the same surname as me, then they
really
be my sister. But I imagine they probably don't, because you would have probably asked.
No. Yeah, I think if I'd have clicked on to, oh, they look similar, they sound similar, and they've got the same surname, I think I'd be like, are you related? Amazing. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me. I've been following you since we both went to the Ori Open evening, and it's such a shame that we didn't meet like each other in person then, but I feel like for me there were so many new faces and I was obviously taking in like the new environment of Ori. So yeah, but I think we both went into like the meditation room together.
Yes, I was very much in love with the meditation room. There was a lot of people. I don't know how you find networking events, but for me it's just like I only have so much I can give. I guess the social battery is, it runs out quite quickly, I'd
say. Yeah, and I think even more so in like networking, like business environments, because when you're socializing, you tend to be with your friends, so you're a bit more laid back, like a bit more yourself. Whereas when it's a networking thing, you're like, you know, game face on, like got to give the best version of myself, which that tends to deplete the energy even quicker.
Definitely, definitely. And then there's other people you recognize, maybe you follow, and it's kind of like, oh, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and trying to piece together, like, there are a couple of people that I have, like, spoken to online, but obviously your brain is then only knows them online, and then I was like, oh, I know your face, but where on earth do I know you from? And then you can't remember their name, and you're like, oh, this is so embarrassing.
Oh, I do that, and then I'm trying to place someone, and then I realise I've been looking at them for quite a long period of time, like, longer than is normal.
Yeah, very awkward. But thank you so much for joining me today. I think that like veganism is something like this time of year people really kind of think about, and I think particularly with eating disorders, I mean it's a very difficult time of year anyway, with going from Christmas to then the New Year's resolutions and all the diet culture, but particularly now that we've got Veganuary thrown in and all of the sort of ethical and moral values there as well. But I guess to start with, do you want to kind of tell the listeners who you are and what you do?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm Sophie. I'm an eating disorder dietitian. I work for myself in a private outpatient clinic, which is online, and I see people internationally. The typical client that I see is someone who has anorexia, but I also support people who have bulimia, binge eating disorder, and maybe don't fit into a diagnostic criteria or haven't received a diagnosis yet. You know, it can take a while to access services that might give you a diagnosis. So, of course, I'm not fussy in that sense. And a lot of people come to me because I talk about veganism online. Often people, they may be vegan and in recovery, and they feel that they haven't been listened to by maybe other dietitians, maybe by their NHS dietitian, or maybe they saw a therapist who said you can't be vegan, and they really rallied against that and became a bit of a barrier to their recovery. So that's kind of why that's a bit of a specialist area for me. And then the other hat that I wear, I work in the NHS 2 days a week in an ARFID service, a pilot service, which is it's very different. It's very interesting.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I think you're doing two client groups there that maybe aren't considered as much as they should be. Mm-hmm. And I think more and more understanding and awareness is coming out, particularly, you know, around the whole veganism and eating disorder thing. Because I know that we did a podcast with a PhD student, PhD researcher in Australia called Courtney a couple of months ago. And when I first kind of reached out to her, she said that she was doing a PhD on veganism and eating disorder recovery.
Oh, wow.
And I just kind of made the assumption of, oh, well, obviously you're going to be doing it about like how people become vegan during eating disorders and that's not good for them and all this, that and the other. And actually her PhD was looking at the opposite of that. So people that are vegan and, you know, need support like you're giving to actually allow them to recover from an eating disorder but still maintain veganism in their life. And so I think it's a really interesting concept, and I think it's like very, very individualized. But to start with, should we maybe explore the reasons why somebody could stay vegan when they are in eating disorder recovery?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is something that the more people I speak to, the more individual circumstances I discover. There's no one, like one story, one right way. It's super, super individual. I guess in terms of why someone would be vegan, I guess how I view it is a kind of veganism is seen as a belief system relating to how we treat animals. So it is in one aspect food, but other aspects also wider environmental parts, like thinking about the clothes you wear, sometimes thinking about travel. Often vegans may engage in activism as well. So that's kind of veganism as a belief system. The dietary side, some people adopt a plant-based diet for health reasons, which is, I'd say, ultimately a diet. So if someone comes to me and they're like, oh, I'm plant-based because it's the best thing for my health, for me, that's initially raising some curiosity around, oh, where did you kind of first start thinking about this? Was that the same time those kind of cognitions around restriction came in? Or not? Like I said, everyone's story is different. But if that's someone who's coming to me, then that's the kind of angle I'm thinking of. If they're someone who's been, their family's vegan, for example, there's a few people I support, they were raised vegan, their family's vegan, and they also have an eating disorder. That's maybe a bit of a different story. And there are some people who maybe have been vegan for a really long time, and then in recovery start to maybe crave animal products, and then thinking about navigating that experience as well. So yeah, those are the kind of, I guess, different journeys that, examples that someone may take during the course of recovery.
Yeah, and I think it's like a really interesting thing to consider, because I do think that whenever we hear now, you know, when someone's in recovery, oh, I'm vegan, I think people ultimately jump to the conclusion of, well, you're doing that to restrict your food intake. And I guess that could be a reason for somebody. But also, like, if you think about it in this day and age, every single product that you could possibly, like food product that you could possibly want as a meat eater or dairy eater or whatever, you can pretty much get nowadays as a vegan. And I always think about, you know, ultimately a lot of the foods that we may maybe think are quote unquote unhealthy, they're also accessible as a vegan. Now, you know, you can get crisps as a vegan or whatever. So I think for me nowadays, it's, I think that's still an element, but less so. And I think that's also a way I always think to determine, are you doing this for a restrictive purpose or are you doing this for, you know, because based on your values? It's like, if somebody offered you vegan cheese, let's say, could you eat that, or are you avoiding cheese because that's something that you fear?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely something that I explore. And for some people, maybe when they're starting on the journey of recovery, they're thinking this is definitely an ethical decision, and then as they go through, maybe they're unpicking it and they're thinking, okay, maybe I don't need to be super strict in this region. Maybe that's actually an element of my eating disorder. And so I don't expect people to come to me and have a really clear picture of everything that's happening in their brain and, you know, fully unpick the eating disorder. It's a journey and it takes time. And I am always really conscious of, like, there being space that you can tell me you're an ethical vegan, and then down the line we can think about including animal products as well. Is, you don't have, you know, it's not something that I enforce as a rule, or, you know, I'm going to be rigid about. I think what's so important in recovery is flexibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just thinking there, you were saying, you know, like, you'll go through and explore it with them. What sort of things would you be looking to explore with a client when you're trying to consider maybe if veganism is best placed in their life?
Yeah, I guess often we think about the wider social circle. If it's something that's the norm for them and they can engage culturally in terms of, at Christmas, there are other people who are having meat alternatives for the main, or, you know, other people who are adapting the Christmas dinner to be vegan. If they're really interested in animal welfare, or they're interested in ethical fashion choices, for example, these are all things I think, oh, this is really aligned with your values, and values work is really important, and it's something I really enjoy doing, understanding who this person is in front of me and what's really important to them. That always feels really fun. And often I explore that through discussion. I also really enjoy using journal prompts, and I also find it's maybe a bit less confronting than if I'm asking them directly. If they're spending some time sat with a pen and paper, I think that's a bit easier, or at least that's my impression. I think it's a bit easier to ponder those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to come back in a bit to talk about how recovery can look for somebody that is vegan. But whilst we're kind of talking about exploring values and stuff, I think something I find is that, like, being vegan, because it does have a big impact on your life, you know, if you are doing it because of animal welfare and stuff, it means that, like you've said, you know, your travel options may change, like the accessibility to clothing and things like that may change, and it does become quite a central part of your life. And for me, I was vegetarian for 3 years, but that started very much in the midst of my eating disorder. And recently I've made the decision to start having some meat products again. And actually, I think I was massively craving it because I was putting it on a pedestal. And since I've said to myself, you can have it if and when you want it, I've not really had the desire for it. But I think one thing I really struggled with was almost the moral side of it, in terms of feeling superior because I was able to be vegetarian. And I think a lot of the time people will have that label as a vegan, and, you know, I have friends who are vegan and all of their friends are vegan, and their life does sort of revolve around it. So how would you work with somebody there? Because I think then, if you are considering that maybe veganism isn't the best thing for them, not only have they got to kind of say goodbye to their eating disorder that they're using as a coping mechanism, they're also going to be changing quite a lot about themselves in terms of their dietary habits as well, and they may feel maybe less of a person because they're no longer vegan.
Oh, that's definitely interesting and such an important point. I guess what you're saying about this person who their community is really centered around them being vegan and losing that sense of community, would come into those feelings of grief and maybe a bit of worthlessness as well. Like you said, if it's giving them a feeling of self-worth or of the label is adding a factor that's superior. I guess with everyone, it's about treading lightly and slowly. I always say to people that they don't have to, I guess when it comes to telling other people about their eating disorder and their struggles, you don't always have to be honest. You don't have to tell someone, yeah, I'm really struggling, so that's why I'm not going to come to your birthday party. You could just say, sorry, I'm busy. This is a bit of a, not the direct example, but I guess kind of.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
With the people around you, you don't have to be upfront immediately and confront all of those challenging discussions at once. I think it's firstly doing the internal work, figuring out what's right for you as a person and coming to terms with that. Connecting with aspects of community where there are people who they're not solely your friend because you're vegan. You know, maybe your friends and family and the people who you've known for a longer period of time, perhaps in this example. And then branching out to those other people. I've definitely had friends who are vegan and then decided not to be vegan anymore. And for me individually, I don't find that a problem. I think one issue that I do have with the vegan community is it is very unforgiving, and you'll see people who maybe they've, I don't know if you've seen like people online who've had followed a vegan diet and then start introducing animal products, they really get a lot of hate in the comments. It's quite a judgmental community. And I think while it can be a community for some people that's really empowering, for other people, sometimes, the harm of that is worse than the benefit of having that community. So I think that's definitely a bugbear that I have. I guess, like I said, take it slow, connect with the other aspects of the people in your life who, you're not connected to via veganism, and then slowly, slowly tell the others, but you don't have to start with difficult conversations.
I think it's really interesting what you were saying there, because actually when I stopped eating vegetarian and I started having a few more meat products, it was actually people that weren't vegetarian or vegan themselves that were like gave the most comments. So people that my friends that were vegan were very much like, you got to do what's right for you and the best thing for your health. And like, if you're sacrificing your own well-being, then there's not much point in trying to save the world because you're not going to be able to do that anyway. Whereas people that eat meat, they were like, what? Why aren't you vegetarian anymore? And I was like, wait, you eat meat? Like, what on earth? It's crazy. But I think something really interesting there that I just wanted to pick up on was you mentioned like, you don't have to tell everybody at once. And actually, for me, my experience is kind of the opposite in that I almost used my eating disorder as an excuse to say, I'm not going to be vegetarian anymore because I'm in recovery from an eating disorder. And it was as though I felt if I didn't have that excuse, that was quite a drastic excuse, I couldn't just say, I'm not going to be vegetarian anymore. Like it felt like I really needed a reason to not do it anymore. So how would you kind of go about that situation if people feel like, I need that excuse, or I feel like, it's not good enough for me to just say, basically I've put like thrown in the towel of being vegan, which is obviously not what people are doing in the slightest.
it's the truth of it is that there's no, it's so hard to generalize because everyone does have a completely individual experience. And I like to think that that's really a really key part of the work that I do with my clients, is that it is, they're in the driving seat and I'm there as a bit of a guide, someone to support them, someone to add, give them, I guess, support in terms of the nutritional realm and encouragement. But ultimately, they're the ones that are making the decision. And for a lot of things, I guess, when it comes to this and labels and, you know, who you are as a person and where you fit in society and which community, that has to be up to you. No one can tell you who you are as a person. And so I think having a really, individualized approach as a clinician is really important. And for the individual, maybe just to take some time to reflect on what is going to be best for them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, something that I tried to think about, and I think this kind of goes with recovery in general, is that you're kind of the person you are and yourself should not just be like one or two labels. So if your only labels are vegan and eating disorder and they're the two things that you've got, then obviously if you then say I'm not really vegan anymore, you're then left with eating disorder. And okay, now I've got to recover from my eating disorder, oh no, there's nothing left of me. I think it's about building that identity outside of any label. And I would say that with anything, like even something that you might see as a positive, which I'm scrolling through my head and I can't think of something that would be a positive to just have on its own. I think it's all about like building other interests and hobbies and things about you outside of just one or two labels, so that, you know, if something does shift, that's okay, rather than having to rely on them of like, you know, I'm Hannah the whatever. And I think often that is the case, like people, because being vegan, you know, it does affect a lot of things, because every time you go out for a meal, you have to say, you know, if anyone says anyone dietary regrets, yes, I'm vegan, you're then known as the vegan. But there's so many other parts to you than just what you eat.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I always think about recovery is that it's such an amazing time for like to reinvent yourself if you want to. Like you say, you kind of this is a, you know, a key label and you're working to get rid of it. What are we going to put in place? And I have a memory of working in an inpatient unit, and there was a client who was like, I think I want to be like someone who's really into music, into gigs. And so she was, every time she was kind of going out to visit some community, she was like booking gig tickets and like, it was, who are you seeing today? And yeah, it was just, it's just so much fun. And that is really, a fun aspect.
That's really funny that you should say that, because I have been thinking very similar along those lines. And actually, it's so hard to think like that when you're in recovery. Like, because you're like, well, yes, I've got this kind of new persona of whoever I want to be, but then that's like the whole world is my oyster. And for me, I've had an eating disorder since I was 12. So I have been in the grasp of it for a very long time and haven't really found anything that I like. But it is really exciting to think like, you know, I could go do like, I don't know, a metalworks course and that could be my thing, or you know, I could go try jujitsu and that could be my thing. And I think that's, the eating sort of limits you so much. And I guess in a way, like veganism also can do that, but with the right intentions. And I think for me, like, that's always been the thing that I've been like, you know, if you can go out to a vegan restaurant and order whatever you want on the menu and not care about it and just fully enjoy it, that sounds great. But I think it's when you're going to a vegan restaurant and then you're worried about what's on the menu and the calories and everything like that, and being very specific about it, that's probably when there's an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely something that I'm kind of conscious of when we're thinking about food and challenges and dietary change. These barriers come up and they're still present, and if that's more of a factor, the kind of nutrition based decision making as opposed to the ethical decision making, then that's a factor. Then I think, okay, maybe let's pause and have a think about if if this is the right time for this.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so coming on to maybe somebody that thinks veganism is right for them, maybe like you said before, they've been vegan all their life, or their family's vegan, and so they followed in their footsteps. How do you work with somebody in that situation to kind of, because ultimately, no matter how you look at it, there is an element of restriction there. So I've heard people say in the past that, you know, for recovery to work, you have to not be vegan for a while and then you can come back to it down the line if you want. But then, you know, if somebody is vegan because of the moral side of it and it's, you know, a really core part of their values, to force somebody to then eat meat or dairy products, I can imagine could be the most traumatic process to go through in recovery.
Yeah, definitely. And autonomy is so, so key in, you know, the individual deciding to recover, you know, deciding to eat, making those choices. And so when that's stripped, I guess being stripped of autonomy is like a key factor in trauma as well. So absolutely, that would be so difficult, and is why a lot of people seek me out to support them, because that's been a real hindrance to their recovery. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Veganism can be restrictive, especially in certain places, especially if you're financially limited as well. That's going to be more challenging because experiencing a wide range of vegan foods, you can do a vegan diet on a budget, but that's going to be a mainly whole foods diet, and it's going to be quite low in fat and may limit other supplements that you may want to use just to make sure everything's, you know, tied up nicely. But experiencing the full range, including things that included in a normal diet, things that might be more processed, that's going to cost more than it would be for someone who eats a normal diet or an omnivorous diet. So absolutely, it can definitely be restrictive. For some people I see, I guess their individual circumstances, maybe their family also eat the same way as them. It's not super limiting. They're not saying no to foods. So I think for some people, it doesn't actually have to be. And it's interesting thinking about the difference between the people who I support who aren't vegan, people who I support who are. I guess that when I first meet someone, I'll ask, you know, go through an assessment and get a really clear understanding of their eating, their fears, the belief that the eating disorder holds. And then maybe we'll make a meal plan. We'll make it a plan to make some changes. Maybe that would look like weight restoration as well, and getting them on a multivitamin. But past that, it's not really that different, I guess, I would say, the process of recovery being vegan.
I think, like you said, if you know, it's going to sound weird, but if you know how to be vegan and to do veganism well, aka you eat the right foods, you know how to supplement well, you know, it's something that you've maybe been doing for a while, or you've done a lot of reading around, I think it can be, you know, can completely go hand in hand with a successful recovery. But I think all too often people don't know the ins and outs of it. And then people fall into the trap of, you know, being malnourished or not having enough calories. And I think that's a really interesting point that you raised about the money side of things. Because, you know, ultimately, I don't know, I think you probably can, I mean, maybe you can tell me, you probably can do a vegan diet without supplements. But it does just make it that little bit easier. And I think people often, one thing that I found is people underestimate how much of particular foods you have to eat in order to get the appropriate nutrition. You know, if you think about something like corn mince, you have to eat so much more corn mince in kind of weight size compared to meat in order to get the same macronutrients, the same micronutrients. And I think people underestimate that, particularly when they're in recovery, of, you know, that's a lot of food that somebody has to consume, but also in a place where somebody, maybe their stomach shrank, that's going to feel even more uncomfortable. So I think there's a lot of different things to consider in terms of recovery, because I think if I'm just thinking about like a vegan chili, you would have to eat a substantial amount of vegan chili to match the protein intake, the fat intake of meat-based chili. And I don't think that's often considered enough.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also a big factor is in dietetic education. I didn't have a single lecture on vegan nutrition. Everything I know about vegan nutrition is information I've sought out myself. So the average eating disorder dietitian is not is unlikely to have that understanding. I've had people come to me and, you know, the dietitian they saw previously has just said, oh, how about some tin of beans, you know, and that's the only thing they can pull in their mind of that's vegan, you know. So I think there's a huge education gap. And you're right, the composition of meals, an Eat Well plate, which is like the government guidance of what a balanced meal looks like, or it's meant, suggested over the course of a day. But an Eat Well plate for a vegan shouldn't look the same in terms of composition than for someone who eats a meat-based diet, because animal products tend to be higher in fat, which means with a vegan diet, to meet your fat needs and to have a diet that's matching in energy, or the energy that you need, you will have to add more fat. That is a kind of expectation that I do set, that volume will be higher than your meat-eating counterparts, and adding.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Plenty of oil when cooking is absolutely essential. I guess the one thing I would say is that most people I work with, actually all of them I've worked with so far, have been vegan for a long time. So they all are kind of pretty clued up on, they normally come to me, they take a multivitamin, and they have the cooking methods. They know kind of how to cook with tofu, tempeh. They've got a good selection of meat alternatives that they also use. So I'd say that's definitely something. And I think, I also think that perhaps someone who is vegan, but for the wrong reasons, you know, it's kind of very restrictive decision. Maybe they're not aware of that when they first decided, but it's very much kind of vegetable only based diet. May not actively seek me out in the way that someone who's vegan and it's really important to them would, if you kind of understand what I mean.
Yeah, I think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but my thoughts behind that are, and this is purely based on my experience, as, you know, the standard sort of recovery and therapeutic model would involve meat and dairy products, like you said before, a dietitian, you know, a more general eating disorder dietitian will not know how to support somebody with a vegan diet. And I think, actually, do I think that? Basically, what I was going to say was, for me, part of the reason that I wanted to be vegetarian was it was another way to kind of cause suffering to myself. Like for me, it was about, you know, well, if my iron intake is low, or if, you know, I do lose all my fat levels and stuff based on what I'm eating, you know, that's a good thing because that's causing harm and that's what my eating disorder wants to do. And so what I was going to say is that somebody that is maybe vegan for the wrong reasons may not sort you out, because you will then support them with a vegan diet. However, I don't know whether that actually does work in my head, because somebody with who is vegan that has an eating disorder will maybe still have that cognition of not wanting to help themselves get better. But I suppose where that does come in is that, you know, you will support them in finding how the vegan diet can support their recovery, whereas if they went to a normal eating disorder dietitian, they're going to be forced to eat meat, which is probably worse than the consequences of recovery from an eating disorder.
Yeah, definitely. But no, those are interesting thoughts. And yeah, absolutely. I think diet restriction as a form of self-harm is something that has to be considered. And if they're, you know, vegan because, and that socially excludes them because that makes them, force them to eat foods that give them absolutely no pleasure. Yeah, that's something we definitely need to reflect on. And yeah, I guess what you were saying earlier about the interview you did with the PhD student and how your impression was, the impression that you explained of how you thought people, you know, vegan in recovery to restrict is a really common impression among professionals. And in my experience, people can absolutely recover while being vegan. And especially, like you said, because all these foods, vegan chicken, vegan steak, vegan kebabs, you know, get all these things. You can buy a vegan birthday cake in a supermarket. So I think maybe in the past it was a lot more restrictive than it is now. And I think for those reasons it's maybe not easier to recover while being, maybe that's one of the reasons why it is easier to recover. But yeah, I think professionals having a wider understanding and reducing their bias and their instant reaction is being like, you're doing this for the wrong reasons, it's not going to help form a good relationship. And that's an absolute key in supporting someone with recovery. It's an interesting study was looking at different types of therapy and therapists and the relationship, and more successful than any specific type of therapy, the predictor of success was the relationship the therapist had with the person in recovery. And I just always hold that in mind. That's so important. And I think that's why it's important for professionals to have more of an open mind.
I have a question, and I'm going to kind of say an answer, but I want to, I don't know how to ask the question without saying the answer, but do you think that in the situation, let's say a therapist is working with somebody and they're vegetarian, and the therapist thinks, or just don't think that this, like, the veganism is best placed here, like, I think it's for the wrong intention, would you say that the best way to navigate that is to sort of explore it with the patient? And even if you explore it and they still think it's the right thing for them, but you're not quite sure, to let them, I mean, I guess this depends on the position that the person's in as well in terms of medically, but if they're medically stable, to let that continue and maybe let them work out that it's not appropriate? Or would you say that as the therapist, you know, it's your place to step in and say, I don't think that your intentions are right here?
Yeah, I think, I guess I would say it really depends on kind of what the red flags and the therapist's experience with that. And maybe they're a therapist who doesn't have much experience with vegetarianism. So, you know, maybe they are. I think like curious inquiry is really important. I think for clinicians, trying really hard to have that curious inquiry without sounding like you have an agenda is really important. Because if you start asking questions that you feel a bit like pointed, then often you get a bit of pushback. And this is actually a challenge that I think I come up with as well. Kind of how do I start these conversations? How's the best way to go about this inquiry? And yeah, I guess sometimes it's why I use journal prompts, because it's kind of, it's not me saying, this, you know, it's less, seems like maybe there's a bit of a less of an agenda with that. I think what's really important is also that person to figure out. And I think that's why I do dedicate a lot of time to building a good relationship, so that there is room for that. There is room for that inquiry. There is room for me calling things out. Or I could, you know, even naming, oh, you mentioned that you were disgusted by your sister eating a steak because you thought she was going to have a heart attack. This is one example of, you know, something. And do you really, you know, is that really what your thoughts are of animal products? I thought maybe you'd be more disgusted because of the, you know, ethical side of it. So those are things I might, you know, just kind of maybe repeat things back to them and curiously and inquire about those. But yeah, I think it is definitely a challenge.
Yeah, I think in my experience, I knew all along that I was vegetarian for the wrong reason, but I didn't want to admit it because I didn't want anyone to stop me. And my therapist at no point said, like, you need to stop being vegetarian. And I think it, because I was in a place where I was medically stable, it allowed me to come to the choice of, actually, I don't think this is right for me or my recovery. Therefore, I'm going to pause for now. And I think because it was, like you said earlier, autonomy is so important, because it was my choice to stop. I didn't feel like I was being forced or pressured into anything. And I think if my therapist had turned around and said, you can't be vegetarian, you know, again, I really want to drill in the fact that I was medically stable, so that was okay. But I think I would have then held some resentment with her of like, why are you not trusting me and stuff? Whereas she let me take the reins. And then when I came to her and said, I'm actually, you know, I've started eating meat products again, it wasn't like a, oh my God, yay, that's what I thought we should do. And like, I'm so proud of you for making that. It was just like, okay, that's good. And like, well done for having that insight. And we moved on. So I think it didn't make a big deal out of it, which I think is the most important thing to do. And for me, that really helped just kind of normalize it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But it sounds like that was a way that worked really well for you. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. And obviously that is an individual thing, and everybody will be different. But I just wanted to, for the end, to think about if somebody is considering doing Veganuary in, well, this will be released on actually the 1st of January. So hopefully people are listening, and then before they make right or wrong decisions, we can just guide them. what do you think somebody in recovery, or maybe they're recovered, should consider if they're thinking about starting a vegan diet?
Yeah, I guess I would say, I guess just really digging into the motivations. Is it because you have felt a really strong connection to animals all of your life, and that's something that you feel is really important for that side of things? Is it because maybe you follow someone on the internet and they seem to have this perfect diet that's vegan? You know, it's kind of, that can definitely be a factor of it, and the internet has been a big factor in the rise of veganism and different, I'd say, dark sides of veganism, like raw veganism and fasting vegans and all those sorts of things. I always say to someone in recovery that now is probably not the best time to add further rules to your diet. I think I always say veganism is always there, but it's something that you know, you'll make a much clearer decision when the presence of the eating disorder is not so strong. And I think if you want to do Veganuary, but you're in recovery, why don't you keep your diet normal, but then do the other aspects of you know, the wider life aspects of veganism? Why don't you look for a local animal shelter and, you know, volunteer with some rescue pigs or something like that? Or why don't you look into thinking about wardrobe choices and moving away from leather or buying secondhand, for example? Yeah, why don't you think about reading into you know, environmental issues, thinking about emissions and things like that? I think these are all huge factors of veganism that can be considered and can be tried and can be super fun, that don't risk impacting your health or don't risk, you know, your eating disorder hijacking them. So I have actually really wanted for a long time to make a resource that's like other ways to be vegan with like different ideas. And
you should do it.
Yeah. Maybe I will.
And I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll let you know if I make it and I'll send it to you, Hannah.
Yeah, no, please do.
Oh, definitely. And the other thing is cruelty-free beauty, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. So thinking about beauty products and buying from companies that don't test on animals, that's a big factor. So I think all of these things are things that you can put your time and energy into, that your eating disorder can't hijack. So I think, yeah, do think about the wider aspects before jumping straight into veganism and question your motivations. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, I absolutely love that you said that, because for me, that's exactly what I did when I decided not to be vegetarian anymore. I was like, okay, cool. I'd already started shopping in charity shops a little bit, but not kind of like fully. So now I will only shop either on Vintage or at charity shops. And one, I save so much money.
Yes.
But two, that for me feels like, you know, that's going to have quite a big impact, and also the cruelty-free beauty products as well. And I think one thing that I really liked about that whole experience was, rather than like manifesting over calories or food or, you know, eating disorder thoughts, it allowed me some like focus on something completely different and something new, and something that was actually beneficial. And I could like really submerge myself into, okay, I'm going to learn about like environmentally travel and how can I do things in a better way that doesn't impact the environment so much, or like, you know, what can I do in my household that means that I am contributing less to climate change and things like that. And I think that like really took a big focus off. And actually, I don't know, maybe this is me just assuming, but the things that I'm doing externally from being vegetarian, I hope, will maybe even have a bigger impact, because I've like gone from doing just one thing to now doing several different things. And I think as well, one thing I found was, you know, back in my days of university, like I was eating meat at least 3 times a day, or at least twice a day. And now, like, that I've said to myself, I can have meat if I want to. I'm not having it as much. And I've introduced lots of other things into my diet, which means my diet is much more broad, which is a really nice thing to do. And I'm still, you know, if you are a meat lover and you're in an eating disorder recovery, then maybe cutting down your meat is not the right thing to do, because I think you should reestablish a relationship with food that you enjoy. But if you can, you know, swap a few meals out a week, then that's so much better than, you know, restricting your food intake and, you know, it having a massive impact on your mental health, or it like, you know, you eating meat at every single meal. Like, there is grey area in between, and I think we often in eating disorder recovery forget that you can just sit in that shade of grey and you don't have to be vegan or only eat meat.
Yeah, definitely, and absolutely love that. The kind of it's not also an option to like explore with different dishes, but without restricting. It's kind of adding instead of restricting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've had someone do this recently, and I've kind of had the discussion of, well, you know, we'll have to do we'll have to add plenty of oil to that meal, because you'll be missing out on the oil that you'd normally get from, you know, other types of to mince, making sure it's not, you know, an opportunity for restricting. And but yeah, I love that. I love the ways in which you can add to your life instead of restrict.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, hopefully people are now armed and ready for the new year, and they will do it in the way that is the best and the most optimistic for their recovery. Where can people go to find out more about you if they're interested in learning more about veganism and eating disorders?
Yes, definitely. I have an Instagram page, which is at Corn on the Corb. It's Corb instead of Cobb because of my surname. I've actually been having a bit of a reckoning of whether I should change the username. I made it when I was in university, and now I think it's a little bit juvenile. But...
No, I we'll like see. It. I think it goes really well, because you do vegan, you help people with veganism as well. So it's very apt.
Okay, thank you. And then I have a website, Dietitian Sophie. I write some blogs. And yeah, you can have a look at them there.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Sophie. It's been a pleasure, and Happy New Year, which feels weird to say on the 11th of December. But
Oh, Happy New Year to you too. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.